Here it is a Tuesday morning, 23 and a half past the hour. And that's always to almost to the second that Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's just... Yeah. Very much so.
It's a wonder how that happens.
Well, radio's...
Must be magic.
Well, that...
I would say it's magic.
That and digital clocks help us a lot in this thing, too. So, yeah. But we can work with analog. We're flexible here at Broken Road Radio. And we enjoy the company and the wisdom and the scientific expertise of Dr. Don. He's a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and operates a winery. He's a vintner in Garden Valley, Texas, just about 80, 90 miles east of Dallas. And Don, welcome. It's another fantastical Tuesday here. I'm looking at a fantastical portrait, a picture. This is an artist's conception of that asteroid impact that the National Geographic article we're looking at kind of centers on. By the way, if anybody wants to follow along with us in the discussion, there's a link to this article in our chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. You can click on it and see the same thing we're talking about here. Don, this is supposedly based on some new research by scientists. Now, you'd think this thing has been researched to death and reported forever, but I guess new scientific techniques, maybe new people who aren't satisfied with the old explanations, keep turning this thing over and over and over. But the article centers on this, what they now have defined as a 7.5-mile-wide asteroid slamming into Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula and changing the whole life pattern on Earth. In fact, it's a mass extinction event. And the article says this thing hit at just the right angle, at just the right speed to prompt worldwide tsunamis and volcanic activity, and how just about every life form, but perhaps birds, were affected, if not wiped out entirely. This is starting to look more and more like scientists coming to a similar description to the Genesis account of the Great Flood. You've got the article. What do you think? Are they getting close?
Well, of course, their timing is completely off, and there's a couple of interesting points in the article. Of course, the Genesis record doesn't necessarily follow this. We don't get any indication that such a huge asteroid hit the planet, but obviously we have evidence of one in the Chicxulub area off the coast of Mexico. So obviously the asteroid did hit, and the question was what was the timing and what was the after effects of this particular asteroid hitting. So the first thing that caught my attention was it says it's at the end of the Cretaceous period, 66 million years ago, a giant asteroid impact at asteroid impacted at the Chicxulub off the coast of Mexico, led to darkening skies and global cooling, killing off all the dinosaurs save the birds. So the birds, according to this, were saved, but everybody else, dinosaurs is their main interest here, got wiped out during
that
period.
I think they assume that's the dominant life form on Earth in their picture here, that the dinosaurs, the reptiles, were, man wasn't a part of the picture at that point, which of course we would disagree with wholeheartedly, but could not have God started the whole chain with an asteroid hit?
Well, except for the first part of that sentence at the end of the Cretaceous period. Now, the Cretaceous period is marked by huge graveyards of sea creatures, mainly. And then the last time we talked about a land creature that was part of the Cretaceous, deposits off the coast. And so the flood had already happened and had started by the time the asteroid hit. That's what that tells me. Mm-hmm. From the time that they pinpoint to say, well, this was after the Cretaceous period, 66 million years ago. It's interesting that they are so precise on the timing of this. So I'm thinking that the asteroid actually hit post flood, And this is a after event, if you will, of the flood, but where a lot of things were going on. A lot of the animals that were on the earth obviously had died, including most of man, but the animals were at least a pair of each and sometimes more were already in the ark. We don't know exactly the timing of this. Was this after the ark landed, or was this while the ark was still floating on the water that this asteroid hit? We don't know, but it appears that the event itself happened after the flood and after there were already major tsunamis that were reshaping.
Let's take a look at this Cretaceous period. Let this Cretaceous period again, because I think we've talked about this a number of times, and maybe you can refresh our memories about it here. We talk about a layer where there's a huge mixture of life forms that scientists said were previously not present on Earth, that somehow this was an explosion, an indication that there were many more life forms, different kinds of critters, than in the previous era. Wouldn't it have been true that the Great Flood would have created such a layer by wiping out all kinds of life forms and putting them together in the same sedimentary layer around the Earth? Isn't that what the... Could this not have been the beginning of the Cretaceous period and not the end?
Well, they must have geological reasoning for stating what they stated, in that it probably carved out some of the layers of the Cretaceous period. The Cretaceous period, what really is that? I mean, it's just big tsunamis coming and wiping across the face of the Earth and depositing both Cretaceous period, mainly sea creatures, but also depositing some land creatures in the mix. And of course we find jumbled bones scattered throughout the world as a result of the flood. So the exact timing of this is based on their description, I would suggest that it was post flood start. Now, there's been many who have suggested that the asteroid actually started the events, but it would have had to have taken a much larger object than this to start a global flood and to start the amount of tsunamis that there were. At the time of the flood, that has already been calculated by creation scientists, and it would have taken something like the size of the moon to hit the Earth.
Wow.
In order to cause the amount of destruction that happened during the time of the flood. Now, we also know, of course, that the Earth was breaking up into smaller pieces, which we've talked about before, from Pangaea, which was one major landmass, and breaking up into other pieces. So the location of this would suggest that landmass, that is America's, has already been formed and had drifted away from the main continent, if you will, the main landmass of Pangaea, at least a certain distance, so as not to disrupt, someplace in Europe, for example, or south of Europe. Africa and that type of thing. So the timing seems to be, post-flood, as far as I'm concerned, and maybe even hundreds of years after the flood, and as they've already, they stated further down in the article that while it kicked up all this dust and the temperatures dropped by 60 degrees, And, you know, if you're picking up dust and temperatures dropping, then you're going to have an ice age. And that's exactly, you know, exactly what, you know, what happened post-flood, primarily, though, due to all the volcanic activity that was being formed. And maybe not so much, you know, from this asteroid. This asteroid,
of course, they talk about the volcanoes here, too, as being the primary contributor. And it strikes me that this picture is similar to what we've talked about in the past. If Pangaea had already broken up and the continents have had moved over. Now, that means the continents float, right? I mean, they're not tied physically to the core of the Earth. They float over. So
right.
It could have been that this asteroid hit before the breakup, and it's happened that it's been discovered now off the coast of Mexico because we've floated. Yeah, this sounds silly, I know, but we've floated over that space. I mean, we arrived after the asteroid had hit. That seems to be a possibility. I'm not sure how we can find out that stuff now other than maybe starting with Genesis and seeing what the history is and then incorporating science. And it just seems to me this article is getting closer. Still a lot of error, room for error in here, especially with respect to the timing. But the description of the events is eerily similar to the way you've described the flood and the volcanic activity afterwards and the lowering of the temperature on the Earth and the ice age. Are we getting closer?
Well, we're getting closer from the point of view that they realize that some type of catastrophe wiped out animals on the Earth. Animals, including man, which they, of course, they're saying man wasn't around at that time. But, of course, he was. And we know from Job that Job walked, had experience with the dinosaurs because of the behemoth and the leviathan that are described there. Now, interesting, Job was post-flood, and Job was post the ark, obviously, landing, and all of the civilizations that we've talked about before. So he's still seeing dinosaurs, so you got to ask the question, well, if he's still seeing dinosaurs, where did they come from? And the logical answer is that, they were on the ark. And so the dinosaurs did survive. At least a pair of them survived after the catastrophe, whatever catastrophe started it, started this whole process.
Of course, Job also refers to ice in a cold climate, doesn't it? I think it's the only book in the Bible that does.
Right. So he's living in a time that is post-flood and probably within the 500 to 700 years after the flood, which would have been the time period of the Ice Age, according, based on the hypothesis that, all the volcanic activity that was happening because the continents were breaking up was throwing dust into the upper atmospheres, which was blocking the sun, and the waters were still warm post-flood because the waters were warmer because of a more temperate environment pre-flood. They're actually saying that the volcanoes warmed the Earth and not cooled the Earth. It was the dust from this kicked up by this asteroid that caused the cooling. And they're suggesting that the volcanoes is certainly, volcanic activity that they could describe in India, in southern India, was gave an environment that helped to other animals to survive and to grow. Now, of course, they're not even acknowledging at this point that there was a global flood. So, because if you have a global flood, you're going to wipe out everything on the face of the Earth, and now you have to deal with the problem of why do we have anything on the face of the Earth at all, which. Mm-hmm. Of course, is the ark, is the answer to that. So they don't want to get anywhere near that. They're just coming up with other. Now, the new aspect of this study is that it's done based on computer modeling in climatology, if you will, and trying to model the atmosphere in the temperatures and the climate if such events took place. And what would that contribute to the atmosphere and to the climate around the world? Good study, except that you're not taking into account all of the things that were happening, you know, back then. So they are getting closer, but they're missing several key points because they refuse to look at a history book that could give them the answers that they're looking for and appropriately time when the asteroid hit the Earth and appropriately describe post-flood events with some of their models. So the volcanic activity in India was just also a part of the result of the flood. And, you know, maybe it was quite a bit after the flood, because I believe this particular asteroid hit the Earth after the flood at some, you know, some number of years after the flood, whether it was, you know, 50 years or 100 years, that would have to be looked at. And I don't know if they could tell from the geological destruction, but you would think that there would be some hints as to the timing of all of this.
You know, you might have just discovered the fly in the ointment here, and it would hinge on computer models. We've all learned a lot about computer models over the last 6 months here. And if we go back into the whole global warming argument, it's based upon computer models, too, that have consistently turned out to be wrong, much like the initial computer models on the COVID-19 pandemic turned out to be wrong. It's almost like if it comes from a computer model, it has instant credibility. And I think that trust is not warranted. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, the weather, to give you an example, the forecasting of the weather is based on computer models. Now, at least 50% of the time, the forecasting is wrong. Now, there is a good percentage where it is right, but if we can't even forecast a week ahead of time what the weather is going to do, how can you describe events that took place thousands of years ago, much less millions of years ago, as they describe here? So it's not that the computer modeling is the issue. It's the assumptions that go into the models. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have all of the data, and that's the problem with the weather, you don't have all the data. I mean, you got a lot of data. You've got temperature, pressure, and, you know, you can say which way the wind is blowing at any given moment. And you can say, well, this in a gross way, this high pressure is coming down, you know, from the north, and therefore we're going to have clear skies today. So, you know, you're more accurate looking at a barometer to say, is the barometer going up than down, to know whether or not you're having rain, which is what was done for hundreds of years.
You know, I had a discussion sometimes with a meteorologist once. In fact, I challenged him. He was our station weather guy, and we would do the forecast together on the air every day. And finally, one day, I asked him, how come you're wrong so often? why can't for a specific area? And he said, well, frankly, the problem, and he used several computer models, and you average it out and you do the best you can, because, and you're a meteorologist, you're supposed to make predictions and you're paid to do that, so you do. But the truth is, he said, there are so many random events that cannot be included in the model that we're simply not aware of. And he gave me just the illustration, the hypothetical of, now this was up in Minnesota where we were broadcasting, he said, over in Dakota, 1,000 butterflies take to the air at the same time. And that changes something, some factor, however small, however slight, however infinitesimal, has, and it's happening over a large area, all these random events, it simply takes the truth away. We don't have the data, precisely what you just said.
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. That's the problem here. It's a problem for creation scientists who are trying to model the events, you know, post-flood, or the events that could have taken place in order to cause such a global catastrophe, if you will, in the subsequent events thereof. You don't have the data, and so you've got to assume, and this is what they've done. I mean, that's how much energy did it take to create the flood? And it turns out to be tremendous. It's a tremendous amount of energy, more than a 7.5-mile asteroid hitting the Earth, which goes to show you that, you know, what did God do in order to create the flood at the time the flood happened, that he started in motion at the time of the very creation of the universe? Was it a quick pass by of Mars, you know, that exchanged a tremendous amount of energy with the Earth? We know that happened.
Would you agree that whatever did happen, that it comports with natural law, which was how he planned things, how he made things to work? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what's amazing. You know, God knew the state of man at the very time he had to destroy the Earth. He knew, and he set things in motion, you know, astronomically, in order for the Earth to experience the cataclysm that we call the global, that's described in the Bible as the global flood. So it should give us pause to say, wow, you know, God is awesome that he could tune these things so precisely that whatever caused the flood, whether it was a quick passed by Mars, or it had to be a huge planet that interacted, and of course Mars is the closest planet to us, that you know, things had to be just lined up right, just so, in order for the event of the flood to start. And the interesting part is, we know that the Earth was actually groaning and mumbling, and things were happening about a week before the flood. And we learn that from the book of Jasher, or Jasher, if you will, which gives a little bit more description of the pre-events, you know, prior to the flood, and the week before in particular. And Noah's still preaching, there's still time for you folks to come on board the flood. I mean, God was so merciful that he was shaking the earth, and people had never experienced that before, and he was shaking the earth a week before to try to shake people up to say, hey, there's an event that is coming that you better listen to Pastor Noah if you want to save your life. But how many people went into the ark? Only 8. Nobody listened to the pastor. Nobody listened to the preacher. And that's how it's going to be at when Jesus returns, that no one is listening to the preacher or the preachers at that time. So it's just, you know, phenomenal.
Interesting situation. And David, we didn't get your question in, did we?
I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, that could be for the best.
I have a lot of good questions. I've still got one about Pangaea and the crater, you know, the asteroid struck from the northeast, but things are moving to the north and west. And I want to know how that happened.
Well, you don't have enough data, David, is the problem.
Okay.
take into consideration the spin of the Earth. It's moving around at 1,000 miles an hour on the edge.
So there's,
you know,
my question.
There it
so,
is.
So what do you want from me?
Well, silence right now would be good, because we could do that. Dr. Don
see
Clark is a member of the board.
What I have to put up with every day, Don. See?
Yeah. Oh, boy. I don't know how you do it.
Creationmoments.com. I want to mention the website to you, because there's a great resource accessible by computer. And they have a storehouse of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. You ought to check it out at creationmoments.com. Don, thank you very much for your time this week and your expertise, and we'll see you 7 days from now, okay?
All righty. You folks take care.
Have a terrific week.
And we'll try to stay dry. I think after tomorrow, things are going to dry up again, and then it's going to get really hot.
Yeah, Such is the pattern. Take care of yourself. Stay healthy.
All righty. So long. Thank you.